Welcome back to American Scene, the show where we talk about movies with American in the title and what they have to say about American identity, culture, and values. My name is Ben Rosen.
I'm Alan Austin.
If you have anything you want to say about the show, any of our previous episodes, or anything we cover today, please connect with us on Twitter at @AmericanScene_, on Instagram at @AmericanScenePod, or send us an email at AmericanScenePod@gmail.com. Today, we're doing our first mini-sode for Phase 2 of American
Phase
Scene.
Phase 2.
And Alan is already breaking out the Wolfman Jack impression. I love it. We'll be getting back into American Graffiti towards the end of the episode. But let's start with Wet Hot American Summer. Let's go back to that. Let's go back to 1981 or 1991.
Oh, yes, because we got together and said, what should we do when we're going to rehash the discussion about Wet Hot? And we're like, let's look at the show. Netflix released two seasons. One is called First Day of Camp. The other is called 10 Years Later. And I think we came to the collective decision that we'd rather look at the 10 Years Later since it's the most recent edition of the series and how it relates to life today and if the material still holds up. And in the 25 minutes that is the first episode, first of all, first thing that caught my eye was there's two random new characters who I had no idea who they were.
They just inserted them into that original scene, which they replay the original scene when they're like, let's meet up in 10 years. And then it cuts to a new shot. And I'm like, wait, they weren't.
Who are they? So right off the bat, I'm like, maybe they're in First Day of Camp, like shoehorned in somehow. I don't know. But they're certainly shoehorned into the irrelevant. The point I'm trying to get to is mostly the cast is back, except for Bradley Cooper, who I read was filming A Star Is Born while they were doing this. And they replaced him with Adam Scott. And they make a ton of in-jokes about how Adam Scott's better looking anyway. Like a lot of good, funny tongue-in-cheek stuff. A lot of the same cast, as I said, the bits aren't as over the top as the movie was. It's a little bit more refined, but there are some moments that are funny. One moment that made me laugh out loud was when Ken Marino's character shows up with, what's the other guy's
character? With Neil, with Joe Latrullio,
Neil, and he goes, Victor, whatever his name is, and then he goes, and Neil! That made me laugh. That was a funny bit. Other than that, it was the most slapsticky stuff was probably the scene with the girls when they're talking about the boys they like, and they're like, and now we go back to unpacking. Like that was pretty funny too. But I would say that it was a pretty harmless half hour of television with nothing too bad, you know, nothing too groundbreaking. If you liked Wet Hot, you're going to be all in on this show pretty much.
It calls attention to the joke a lot more in this than it was than what it did in Wet Hot. Like the only time it kind of called attention to the joke was the baseball thing. Was like, yeah, this is trite. Yeah, they didn't want to do it anyway. And they even reference that bit in this episode. It's a lot of it's very referential, like a lot more referential to pop culture than even just like the kind of more subtle references that Wet Hot did. Like when we talked about, you know, kind of other summer movies it was riffing on or, you know, kind of big blockbusters that it was riffing on. Like there's Victor and Neil, Ken Marino's character and Joe Latrullo, like clearly doing a cocktail ripoff. And that's great. All of Ken Marino's outfits are outstanding. I did love the introduction of Adam Scott as replacing Bradley Cooper because they do it in the same way that I think Vegas Vacation did, like the recasting of the kids in that series. So he's sitting at the dining room table and he's like, "Look, we don't spend any time together. I barely recognize you anymore."
Sidebar. The Vacation movies are some of my favorite movies of all time. Just like, what a series.
I did a rewatch of Vegas Vacation not too long ago, which is why I remember that. That was the first one in the series that I saw before I went to Vegas when I was like 8 years old. on my own, had a blast. No. What I think this actually does, just to bring it back to our conversation on the sort of camp as a distinct world from the urban rural divide and being like kind of an escape from the city. It really actually does a good job of kind of parodying the hustle and bustle of like adult life in the city, with Katie's character, with like the new characters, who like one is like an whatever Upper West Side, you know, Wall Street guy, got the like Gordon Gekko look going on, and the other one is references like being a hippie and doesn't believe in like social institutions like marriage and things like that. It's a lot of really interesting elements like that. The scene with Coop and his lit agent is great. His publisher, I believe. What does he say? Oh yeah, like this has the potential to capture the zeitgeist of the early 90s. It's just so on the nose.
There's so many on the nose things, like when Neil's girlfriend is giving him his box of stuff. It's like a beeper and inline skates.
That's Vic. He's the greatest. He's the best. Just one of a kind. They broke the mold, et cetera, et cetera. You know the drill.
So you guys are still doing that 10-year reunion thing, huh?
Yeah, well, we made a promise to meet up. We don't just walk away from our commitments to each other, Sharon.
Here's the rest of your stuff. It's your Apple PowerBook 100. It's your inline skates, your beeper. It's a bunch of other things from 1991.
What happened to us, Sherry?
And Amy Poehler makes a joke, too, I think, when she's trying to get out of bed to catch her flight. I think there's another self, you know, wink at the camera. But
Counting Crows concerts at the Viper Room, I think, is what she says.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of fun tongue-in-cheek moments. It's really harmless half hour. And the only character that they briefly get into but don't really is the Elizabeth Banks character. I think they just wanted her to appear on the pilot, and she'll be her and Paul Rudd will show up later on more so. Really, and here's the funny thing. Now that I've watched that first episode, I think I may watch the rest.
I watched the whole thing, and so I know that Elizabeth Banks gets a whole bunch of stuff too. I actually can't remember if she, yeah. This would have been the one where she like uncovers some big story, you know, what they tease at the end, like she's part of like uncovering that, that thing. I may be wrong. I watched it several years ago whenever it first premiered. Let's see. What else did I write down? Zach Orth is basically playing Jack Black in High Fidelity.
Yes.
That kind of character.
He has the movies of the time written as coming soon to VHS. I think Gremlins 2 is on there and a couple others. It really is like a harmless half hour. I don't know how else to put it. It's just like, it's kind of a delight if you're down. If you're down, it's a delight.
It's fun. I wonder if, I don't know when They Came Together was, but it feels like all the city stuff that he's parodying there kind of fits in well with They Came Together. I don't know. Maybe you should watch it. If you haven't watched They Came Together yet, maybe check it out.
Yeah. I just want to look over our notes. Are there anything else from the movie itself that you wanted to talk about?
Just that I was trying to see, like, maybe we could play a game because the cast is so big that I wanted to see, do any of these actors appear in other American movies with smaller roles? And the only one that I came up with that was at all meaningful was Molly Shannon, who plays the stage version of Joyce from Splendor with what's his name from
Donald Logue.
Whatever. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
In this first episode, they also they do a couple callback jokes. The one where they are young adults, like we're in our mid-20s now. They do that. The funniest part of the episode is when they talk to one of the characters. I think it's the British friend, a British boyfriend of Amy Poehler, talking about, yeah, we had a crazy summer 10 years ago. We shot heroin. We had a space station fall on us. Like, really funny stuff.
Yeah. And that is Jai Courtney.
Oh, from Suicide Squad now?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. When he first turned over and I heard the British voice, I was like, he kind of looks like, did I forget that Tom Hardy did this? And then, it became clear that that was definitely not him. Let's see. Oh, yeah. And then the only other note I had is that Wet Hot joins American Dreams on our list of films with only one total nomination for any award ever.
What was the nomination?
It was for the open palm at the 2001 Gotham Awards, where the winners were Hedwig and the Angry Inch and The Believer, the early Ryan Gosling movie. And at this ceremony, De Niro was given their Lifetime Achievement Award.
Very cool.
Do we want to share any memorable camp stories briefly before we jump into American Buffalo?
You know, I was thinking about this, and I was a camp counselor for about, I want to say 5 years, 4 or 5 years. And a lot of the tropes regarding counselors in the campers are very true. Guy counselors and girl counselors used to like flirt with each other by using the kids, like, go tell that counselor I said blah, 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 and go tell that counselor blah, blah, blah. Never me. I was never the cool counselor. I was always the
As we've established older... on this podcast previously, several times you were like, I was never cool. I wasn't cool.
No, the only time I was ever cool is when I used to go to the liquor store with my parents and go into the icebox section. You know how there's that section in the liquor store with already cold stuff?
You mean you were like literally cool?
Yes, and just how clunky I told that joke proves how not cool I am.
Listen, so Alan, just like I live for your terrible jokes. That's like you and me. That's our thing.
Yeah.
And they can't take that away from us.
They never will. And so as me as a counselor, like I was kind of one of the older counselors, so I always had seniority. So the last like 2 years, I didn't have to go in the freezing cold pool with the kids. That was good, earning that seniority. I mean, it was like specific stories. It was so long ago, I don't remember anything truly specific. We used to make fun of the camp directors, I'll tell you. So it's not like, you know... Let's say this was 2007. Our camp counselor was the town basketball coach, and he used to talk through his teeth, like he was always like mad, but he wasn't. And we were at an orientation, and he was like, "You guys gotta treat the kids nicely, okay? Some of them aren't the cool kids. You just gotta. We watched a kid on America's Got Talent at home, and he was." He was super offbeat, but he had special talents, and treat all the kids like that kid. And we were all like, what is he talking about? But there would be a lot of that. There
well,
would
maybe
be a
he's
lot
got
of,
like a secret talent, like the guy in Wet Hot American Summer. Like he can
that's why,
like,
yeah,
create,
that's what made me think
like
of
he's
it.
Storm from the X-Men.
Yeah. So nothing too specific, but just general absurdity. A lot of the tropes are very, very true.
So I can think of one story. It's kind of a sweet story. There's an actual like arc to it. Right. Like as opposed to like I can think of random memories and random things mm-hmm. that kind of, you know, moments that pop up. But at Club Getaway, every night was a dance party. And I think that's where I started being like, I fucking love dancing.
Stole the show at my wedding.
Every wedding.
Humble.
Well, I mean, talk to anybody who's been at a wedding with me. So at 1 year, I was probably 11 or 12 years old, maybe 11. And mm-hmm. I meet this girl. There were a bunch of other camps at this one place during this week. So we were meeting a bunch of other people from like different towns, like places, probably places in Connecticut or even New Jersey, you know, other places in the Northeast. And this was in the time of AIM. This was like before, you know, you could just take a picture on a phone or something. And so I meet this girl and we like dance every night together and slow dancing. And like, I might've had my first kiss with her. I can't remember. And I don't think we like kept in touch at all. Like, I don't think I got her AIM screen name or whatever. And the next year, by that time, like completely forgotten what this person looks like, but I remember her name and obviously this history that we had together. And the next year, randomly, you know, it was just find somebody in the crowd to dance with. When the slow dance comes on, you're like, find a pretty girl, just like, you know, like at the hop. And
Or heavyweights.
Right. This was much more that we were already like there were people on the floor like grinding and stuff. It was not like heavyweights. It was not an all boys camp. So but I find this girl, ask her to dance, and we're like, I guess, talking while dancing. Mm-hmm. And we realized that we're the same people that we were dancing with the previous year.
Oh, that's
like,
funny.
Yeah, it was the same girl. And she and we like hug and we get so excited. And we're like, we like had this fun surprise reunion. It was so, it was very cute. It was very, very
cute.
That
is very cute.
Yeah.
That's a cute story. I like that.
Yeah. Cynthia. Can't remember her last name. Cynthia, if you're out there.
Cynthia, if you're out there, Ben is looking.
Well,
no,
I'm
not.
It'd be really fun to, you know, like meet those people who you only knew for like 3 days.
Yeah.
And see where they're at.
Like a missed connection, but with a little bit more context.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm ready to, let's jump into, I do have another camp memory, but it's going to circle back in American Graffiti, which I'm really looking forward to sharing that one with you. I called my sister a couple days ago because I was like, holy shit, I just realized something. So that'll be a fun one to get into also. American Buffalo.
Yes, this is a stage-to-film adaptation, which will come into play shortly. I like this movie. I never really thought about it after we watched it. After we talked about it, I should say. Other than doing research for this episode, the movie itself is just kind of like there in existence. I don't know how else to put it. It didn't resonate with me.
Interesting. I actually found myself thinking about it more and more because I listened back to our episode. And just a lot of the, like, it's a very well-written show. It's just, like, it really doesn't work as a movie. Like, it almost could work as a radio play, you know,
yeah.
As well as it does as a stage play, but not really as a movie, at least in this form. But I was listening to the Redeparted Rewatchables episode earlier this week, and one of them mentions, who's the actor from Bosch?
Oh my gosh, what's his name? He's from Sons of Anarchy, too.
Anyway, they were talking about this guy doing Al Pacino impressions. Al Pacino, who originated the role on, I believe, on Broadway of Teach in American Buffalo.
Titus Welliver.
Titus Welliver, that's right. And on the episode, they were like, yeah, Titus Welliver was doing Al Pacino impressions. Like, suddenly he was doing, like, American Buffalo. And I was like, what? And I immediately looked up that clip.
Seeing Al on stage is wild because, you know, he has an instrument that he was putting it out there.
Yeah.
And his opening salvo on the stage, he says, fucking Ruthie. I think it's 10 times. He goes, fucking Ruthie, fucking Ruthie, fucking Ruthie, fucking Ruthie, fucking Ruthie. And this arc of spit is coming out of his mouth with each. And you see all these people in the front that are trying to. It's not Blue Man Group. They didn't get the ponchos, right? They're trying. They want to get spit on by Al. But it was mind-blowing. But that's when I first really, really clocked his thing of touching and the stuff with his hair. Because he also did this thing with his hair throughout the entire play.
Right.
From the mouth of a southern bull dyke, ingrained asshole, the vicious nowhere. Can this trash come and I take nothing back? I know you're close with him.
That's pretty crazy.
Strange.
There's a dog barking extremely loudly.
We'll get him on the pod. Let's go. anyway, it was just
what did
a
you
strange,
think? Hey,
strange
hey,
coincidence.
Dog, what did you think of American Buffalo? Rough.
it was a strange coincidence.
Cool.
Yeah. Let's talk about, what are some of your other, if you didn't really like this one, what are some stage to film adaptations that you like?
I don't even want to say I really didn't like it. I liked it. You know, I think the ending was just so blah that, a movie with a bad ending, it really hurts it. I know that sounds like I'm not saying anything totally groundbreaking there.
No,
but
you need a good ending.
You need a good ending. The only movies that can get away with bad endings are really funny comedies, in my opinion.
I guess. That's fair.
So correct me if I'm wrong, if some of these were films first, but from my research, I did my own independent research, okay?
And these are the Wikipedia, but okay.
That's what I used. That's what I used. I'm going to skip the Shakespeare ones because there's so many. And
I don't think I put any Shakespeare on my list, yeah.
No, but people out there would want us to mention 10 Things I Hate About You
I don't count those. Those are like reinterpretations. I don't count those as adaptations.
Well, then you have, what about Ethan Hawke's Hamlet?
Well, that's on my list of, that's number one.
Is it?
No, it's not. I love Ethan Hawke, though, but I've never seen the movie.
Okay. All right, so here's some of mine. I wrote one I was disappointed by, and that was Carnage.
Because the play, God of
Carnage, had so much hype. And, you know, James Gandolfini, Jeff Daniels, Marsha Gay Harden, I forget who else was in it. But the movie had John C. Reilly, Jodie Foster, Kate Winslet, Christoph Waltz, and it was a dud. The movie had no heart. It just went from point A to point B. It just felt, with such talented actors, what a letdown that was. And it showed. The movie bombed. It didn't get any awards. All right, so here's some I like. Brighton Beach Memoirs, because playing Eugene was one of my favorite roles. I really wanted to play Eugene at some point. I'm a little old now. The Birdcage, which is La Cage aux Folles.
Yes, yeah. Alan. No, it took French, right?
Ah, oui.
That's right. So I just saw The Birdcage for the first time recently. It's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
yeah.
Great.
And
Hank Azaria.
I saw a bunch of great plane movie. I saw a bunch of people on my recent flights watching The Birdcage.
Oh, great plane movie.
Yeah.
Great plane movie. Doubt, I think, is a great movie.
Doubt's on my list. Yeah. I rewatched that during COVID last year. It's excellent. It really builds atmosphere and like allows for kind of stretches of kind of like gazes and looks and like people witnessing things as opposed to like a lot of dialogue like Buffalo does. Doubt is excellent. Yeah.
Doubt is, I wouldn't call it one of my favorite films, but I think it's one of the most well-made films I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
This next one's not one of my favorite movies, but I thought it was pretty good. Frost Nixon, obviously, was a stage play first.
Ron Howard.
Glengarry Glen Ross, which we mentioned last time, but, you know, fun fact for people who may not know, the Alec Baldwin character is not in the play. He was created solely for the movie.
And that is by far, like, the thing that everyone knows about Glengarry Glen Ross, even if they haven't seen the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Glengarry Glen Ross, by the way, phenomenal. I know our friend Tony Cavallo always wanted to do an all-female version of Glengarry Glen Ross. That's like one of his dream projects. Ides of March was a movie I liked the first time, and then the second time I watched it, I was more like, eh. But I still think it's very good.
Yeah, haven't revisited it since I saw it, but holy shit, one of the best casts of the...
Yeah.
At least those several male leads is Paul Giamatti, George Clooney, Ryan Gosling... I know there's a fourth. Is it Philip Seymour Hoffman? My Jesus fucking Christ. Holy shit.
Yeah. And then Evan Rachel Wood's really good in it.
Yes, yes.
Moonlight is a play, I believe, first.
Sure was. Unproduced at the time.
Wow.
I don't know if it's been produced as a play since.
Streetcar Named Desire, you know, whatever. It's one of the classics.
You really just kind of rolled over it. But yeah, I didn't actually really like the movie, to be honest.
I like the movie. I like the movie, but I feel like it's such like an obvious thing to say. 12 Angry Men is a great movie.
Yes. You know, I always wanted to watch I think it was a Russian remake called 12 that was nominated for Best Foreign Language Film in like 2008 or 9. I really wanted to check that out and see like, what did they change? You know, how is it different? But that is a great example of a play that really uses visual style and visual language to serve the story and to tell the story. And it's very obviously very hard to do in one room for the entire movie, but they managed to do it. They pull it off.
It's fantastic. And then two of my personal favorite movies. One is a dream role of mine. The other is my third favorite movie of all time. So the dream role one is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I would love to be in the stage adaptation and play, you know.
And I believe that was a movie first. That was the book. And
are you
then,
sure? I think the movie's from like 70, but the play was first produced in 1967.
Oh, but was the movie the adaptation of the play or the book?
Whatever, splitting hairs. Splitting hairs.
Okay.
Wow, you really nitpicked on that one. All right, and the one that's my third favorite movie of all time is A Bronx Tale.
Which I have not seen, I'm sorry to say.
I've seen A Bronx Tale on Broadway with Chaz Palminteri doing the one-man show, and I've seen the musical on Broadway, which had Nick Cordero, who passed away during the pandemic, playing the Chaz Palminteri character.
Mm.
And the movie is just one of my favorite movies. So the one-man show, obviously, Palminteri wrote it. It got turned into the movie. So Bronx Tale would be my favorite.
Is Bronx Tale, it has that quote that it's like, the great women in your life, they come around once, you know, once every 10 years, like the great fighters,
the great
Rocky
boxers,
Marciano. Yeah. That is, I believe, the lead into an Anderson .Paak song.
Oh, nice.
So, and I was like, what movie is this from? So now I got to check it out.
You got to do what your heart tells you to do. I'm going to tell you something right now. You're only allowed three great women in your lifetime. They come along like the great fighters once every 10 years. Rocky Marciano, Sugar Ray Robinson, Joe Louis. Sometimes you get them all at once. Me? I had my three when I was 16. That happens. What are you going to do? That's the way it goes, you know? I'll tell you right now. See this girl? Maybe this girl, she put wind in your sails. Maybe she's your first gray one.
Great stuff. What about some of yours, Ben?
Cat on a Hot Tin Roof is excellent.
I've never seen it.
I highly, highly recommend. Highly recommend. There's one line in that movie that sticks out. I can't think of what it is now off the top of my head, and I should have written it down. Something like being a 30-year-old child. Like, he grew up, but he's still just a 30-year-old child or something like that. It's. I was like, oh, shit. And I saw it when I was 30. So I was thinking a lot about where I am in my life. A Few Good Men, just excellent adaptation of that. Closer.
Closer's a great, phenomenal friggin' movie.
It's so good.
It is.
It's so good. And, like, I'm sorry, that is on my list of rewatchables. It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of really great, just...
The Natalie Portman character, unbelievable. All of them, really.
Like, Jude Law and
Jude Law's Clive Owen,
and
Julia
Clive
Roberts.
Owen fucking with each other. It's so fucking good. There's so many... it's so good. God damn it.
R.I.P. So Mike Nichols. R.I.P. Yeah. Mike Nichols.
Yeah. Let's see. A Doubt is on my list. Gaslight, the very old movie, Ingrid Bergman and Joseph Cotten. Excellent movie. I didn't know it was an adaptation of a play, but that's where the term comes from. Gaslighting.
Oh, okay.
It comes from the play, but the film popularized. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom just had recently. Really, really excellent. Rabbit Hole. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
I've never seen the movie.
Gary Oldman and Tim Roth. It's fun. And then I also had His Girl Friday and 12 Angry Men. There are also a few, you mentioned Moonlight, but a few of them have also won Best Picture, including Casablanca, Hamlet, the Shakespeare, we weren't going to mention any Shakespeare, but Amadeus, Driving Miss Daisy are other plays that have won Best Picture. So
I also wanted to point out, in high school, I was really into, like, being a theater nerd, not like in the sense like singing at parties and stuff, not like that, more like I want to read as many plays as possible, I want to be up on all the, and there was this they filmed every single one of Samuel Beckett's works into its own little like film, and I watched that collection twice, and I don't want to put it here because they're not like feature films, but I do want to make reference to the fact that I did watch that twice, and the second time when I was older and not as nerdy, I was like, I gotta get through this. But there are some really good ones in there. The Waiting for Godot one, you have to like that play. I'll just put it that way. You have to like Beckett, because if you don't like absurdism and just what feels like utter nonsense, even though there's a grand picture, you're going to be bored to tears. I've gotten a lot less needing to feel like I need to be hip the older I get.
Like cultured, like in the know.
Yeah, not I'll put it trivial. I don't need to be as trivial. Cultured, I'd like to be cultured, but I don't need to be as trivial. I don't need to know, like, if we played the movie game now, I probably wouldn't do as well as I could 5-10 years ago. You know what I mean? Like,
We had more time to, like, watch everything and, like, ingest everything.
Time, and you know, now, and honestly, when you get older, it's not that your interests change. I think it's just, like, for me, it's that at the end of a long day, I'm not turning to something I've never seen before. You know what I mean? I'm not turning to a heady piece that's going to make me think. I'm turning to video games or movies that I can just throw on, or TV shows that I can finish the sentences without even looking at the screen. Like, that's a big part of my life now. And I think that's why I've kind of distanced myself from being in the know as much, you know, these days.
Well, that could function as a good transition to American Graffiti. We still have more to talk about American Buffalo here, because we're going to get into some recasting. But part of that has to do with, like, the comfort in the familiar. And you know, if you're stressed from a long day, it's so much easier to engage in something where you know what the ending is going to be than to try to watch something new and get anxious about not knowing.
And in a psychological sense, that could come from, like, you had a long, stressful day where things were unpredictable and you don't know how you're going to feel. You want to turn to that, you know, familiarity.
Stability.
Speaking
for sure,
of recasting.
Do you want to just go back and forth with our pairings? Let's go with the most interesting pairings as we play with the roles of Don and Teach, which are phenomenal roles, with the actors and actresses available to us from the films that we have covered thus far on the podcast. So I'll let you go first.
Okay, my first pairing is, we talked off air about how we're both going to have the same Don, and it's Paul Giamatti.
It's absolutely Paul Giamatti. I want to see that. I actually want to absolutely fucking see that.
Yeah, so I'm going to give you the guys I have, and you tell me what you think the most interesting pairing would be.
Oh, sure, okay.
So for Don's, I have Paul Giamatti, Jeff Bridges, which may be a little tough, and Michael Keaton.
So interesting. I'm glad you brought up Michael Keaton. I had Michael Keaton as a Teach.
I could see that too.
I think.
Michael Keaton is as an actor.
Like, excellent. He's so yes. good. Yeah. So and happy for the Keaton Renaissance. The
Birdman all day.
Yeah. I haven't seen his new movie yet.
The Netflix one.
Worth. Yeah. Yeah.
And then for Teach. I mentioned how I wanted John Leguizamo there, but it doesn't make sense contextually. I'd love to see him play Teach, but here are my Teaches. Obviously, Walt Goggins. Like, obviously. Caleb Landry Jones in a couple years. Not quite yet. Christian Bale.
I mean, he can do anything. The man can do no wrong.
But I don't see him as Don.
Yeah, no.
And Colin Farrell.
I would actually like to see Colin Farrell as Don. I could probably see him do both, but I think he could be a really good Don.
I think Cassandra's Dream is the performance that you could say he could be Don.
Interesting. I think Cassandra's Dream is the one where you could see him do Teach. He's kind of like, he's a little nervous. He's a little like ticky. He's got like...
So is Don. Don's always chain smoking and reading the paper.
That's true. Like, yeah, yeah. No, you're right. You're right. He is a little more nervous than... Yeah, Teach has that confidence. You're right. You're right. Yeah, that's a good point.
But I think
another
my
Cassandra's
favorite pairing...
Dream shout out for Alex Kellerman. By the way, before we end the American... I know we have more to talk about with recasting, but I was just going to say, our friend Jillian Morgesi would be really upset if we didn't mention how good the... Much Ado About Nothing adaptation is that she was in. It is really good.
Oh, yes.
It's really good. Yes. Actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
Shout out to Jillian, who is probably not going to hear this.
Well, I'm going to fucking send it to her because I'll tell her what the time code is when we get to drop her name.
That's no knock on Jillian.
No, she's wonderful. And Jillian, we got to play Catan soon.
But my favorite pairing, I think, from mine is Giamatti and Goggins.
I would very much like to see that. I'm going to take one of your Teaches, Caleb Landry Jones, who I love, and pair him with my other eventual cast member, Seth Rogen, as Don.
Interesting. Now, Seth Rogen, because this is based on Pickle, so are you saying Seth Rogen, the 20-something, or Seth Rogen, the old guy?
Somewhere in between. He's got to find somewhere in between the two extremes. But yeah, I think Seth Rogen eventually could definitely be that guy. Absolutely. He's got to grow into like a more character-y, character actor version of himself with some like gravitas, like a, yeah. Like that kind of guy.
That's how I feel about Caleb for Teach.
Yeah, yeah. The other guy I had for Don was Hector Elizondo.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah. For Teach, Willem Dafoe. Come on.
Yeah, I could see
another phenomenal performer.
Another phenomenal performer. Someone once asked me when I was in like 11th grade, if you could have the career of any actor, who would you pick? And as an 11th grader, I said Willem Dafoe.
You had just seen Spider-Man, I guess.
No, it was more like, A, he's respected, he's in a ton of great movies, and he could live his life without being bothered. You know what I mean? Like, that's the career I'd want.
He has a very good career. He's been in a ton of stuff, both as a lead and as a like an ensemble member. He's great. He's excellent.
He's even played Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. My other potential Teach.
Okay.
Which I'm thinking more in the vein of when he appeared on Rescue Me and won an Emmy for his portrayal of the character on Rescue Me, Michael J. Fox. He's a rapscallion. He is a no good Nick in Rescue Me.
And
he's kind
of
a dick.
This is what I'm saying. This is post Parkinson's diagnosis.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think he's in a wheelchair in Rescue Me. Yeah, and he gives shit to Dennis Leary.
Speaking who'd be a good Teach.
Yeah.
Like, all right, interesting choices.
Yeah. Oh, and then an actress who I could see playing either role, although it would probably not make any sense in Teach, is Annette Bening. I could absolutely see Annette Bening in her now, like, kind of I don't give a fuck years, playing an excellent Dawn.
Okay.
I don't know why.
I'd watch it.
I feel like she's a chain smoker in 20th Century Women. I've only seen about half that movie. But anyway, I think she could be excellent in that. Man, I would watch any of these.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, and then I did, just speaking of recasting American Buffalo, I did look back at the Lawrence Fishburne casting, and that was Lawrence Fishburne and Sam Rockwell.
Sign me up.
I mean, yeah. And then the kid, the Bobby, was going to be played by one of the guys from American Crime Story, the second season. I forget his name. He's one of those Ryan Murphy guys. Yeah, I mean, just those Lawrence Fishburne and Sam Rockwell. Yes,
yeah,
100%. Anyway, American Graffiti. I want to just clarify one thing. I think actually you said it really well when you were talking about obsessing over pieces of nostalgia and like times gone by as an identity and as like as a source of comfort as opposed to like accepting your past, like using it as a story for how you got to the present and kind of moving on. And that's sort of like my frustration with the reboots and the remakes and the like, you know, not only 90s kids will remember this and, you know, all these kinds of listicles and things like that. Is just, it feels like it's a weaponized kind of nostalgia as like spoon feeding us a commodified version of nostalgia as comfort food instead of helping us understand like using those time periods and stories set in those time periods as a means to help us understand the moment we're living in now.
Yeah, and it goes further than just pop culture. I remember at a job I had a couple years ago, you know, this older coworker of mine who was in a leadership position was saying something like, you kids, man, like, you come out of college and you expect the world. You know, I worked my way up in the system and, you know, I paid my dues and I, you know, and this is a guy who was probably in his early 60s. And it's like, and essentially he was saying, back in my day, you, mm-hmm. you got the job you got and you worked yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he was saying, like, kids coming out of college today shouldn't just want the job they want. They should look for a good job and work their way up, and that should be that. And it was just like, you know, yeah, dude, you also were able to buy a house as soon as you left college, like, with no problem. Like, yeah. It was,
not to interrupt you, but, like, I don't think our media helps us understand as a society the way things have changed over the past 20, 30 years where, the, like, it's not the same. It's just not the same. And yeah, like, congratulations, you were able to do all that. I can't. And like, if only we could see that reflected in stories about how things have changed or, mm-hmm. you know, a period of time sort of coming to an end, as opposed to all these headlines about, oh, millennials are killing the wine industry and millennials are killing this industry and millennials are doing this and like all things being blamed on a younger generation for how things had changed when we were too young to control anything.
It sucks. Back in my day is one of my least favorite phrases.
Yeah. But back in my day, when I was like 15 years old, I was the weird kid who got really into doo-wop.
Okay.
So I was trying to think, did I start loving doo-wop because I had seen American Graffiti? But I don't think I saw American Graffiti until I was maybe 17 or 18 years old. So somehow I just like, I think it was because of an episode of Saved by the Bell, more nostalgia.
Okay.
But they performed Come Go With Me.
Okay.
On Saved by the Bell. And that's the first time I heard it. And I was like, oh, this is fun. And I was doing a cappella at the time. And so I think it was just a natural progression to get me into stuff like that. So without further ado, I think we should give our top five songs, top five tracks from this amazing 41-song
yeah.
soundtrack.
All right, you want to go first? Because I went first with the casting.
Sure, sure. Well, Come Go With Me is at number 5, and I actually have that tied with Little Darlin', because both of those songs were definitely like the gateway drug for me. Okay. Like, they were on heavy rotation. This sounds so dumb. Like, what other high schooler was into doo-wop in 2005? But yeah, so those are what I have at number 5.
Okay, at number 5, I have Chantilly Lace by the Big Bopper. And mostly because one of my favorite movies is True Romance. And there's that scene where Christian Slater's at the payphone and they time the Big Bopper with Christian Slater going, "Hello, baby." So it's always held a special place in my heart. That's what I have at number 5.
That's why I didn't have that on my list, because I hate that "Hello, baby." It's, I think it's so annoying. Sorry. Number 4 is Green Onions.
Okay.
Which you hear as they're like walking up to the final drag race, which you also hear in The Sandlot. I don't remember what scene it's in The Sandlot, but just a classic song for some classic American movies.
Okay, so 4th place for me. This was tough. I have 7 on my list, but I'm going to go with Barbaran, because as a kid I just remember saying "ba ba 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 ran" all the time, unprovoked. It was just something I muttered often. So I have to put it on the list, just because, like, literally, as like a 5-year-old, "ba ba 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 ran" always.
And you know what? It's not the Beach Boys version. Beach Boys have a couple other songs on this soundtrack, of course, but this one isn't one of them. And this is actually another song that was performed on Saved by the Bell. It's funny enough. I don't have that or any of the Beach Boys songs on my
list. They're not on my list, no.
Yeah. Number 3, I Only Have Eyes, The Flamingos.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
That's one where I really love the subtle shabop shabop.
Yeah.
That like comes in underneath.
I Only Have Eyes.
Yeah.
Okay, number 3 for me is Come Go With Me by the Del Vikings.
Yeah. It's a staple. It's like,
yeah,
it's the one that I think probably the most people would recognize from that, like, that genre.
Yeah. What do you have at number 3?
As I did number 3. I'm doing on number 2.
Oh, I'm sorry. Number 2.
Ain't That a Shame. That's Domino.
So good.
It's great.
Number 2 for me is Why Do Fools Fall in Love?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So good.
That almost made my list.
So good.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess we should do honorable mentions. Johnny B. Goode is an honorable mention for me, and Runaway.
Yeah, like, Runaway is good. That's
Del Shannon.
Yeah, yeah. And then there were 2 Buddy Holly tracks that we should shout out, because they mentioned Buddy Holly in the film, and That'll Be the Day would have been the one that would have come closest to making my list. And yeah, Johnny B. Goode, I mean, it's an excellent song, but I don't, like, I love it because of Back to the Future. So
right,
it's
not one of my favorite songs, to be honest with you. It's like, I respect it more than I like it.
Yeah, it was on rotation for me at some time in my life, because I was like, oh, this is that classic song that like everybody knows, everybody loves, and like,
yeah.
But like other people my age maybe, you know, haven't, like, don't recognize it yet, so I could feel cool like liking Johnny B. Goode. But yeah.
And what do you have at number, did you say your number 1?
Oh, my number 1 is Since I Don't Have You by the Skyliners.
Okay, that's a good one.
It's. I mean, all of these are pretty short and sweet, and that's another reason why I really love them. But I don't know why. I just really love the the melody.
Okay, it's perfectly good.
Falsetto. Yeah.
And my number 1, you've already said it, Ain't That a Shame by Fats Domino. It's one of my favorite songs of all time. So it's unbelievable.
Ain't That a Shame.
So good. What a soundtrack. This movie flies by because of the soundtrack. Well, we mentioned how it didn't always fly by, but you're always into the songs, I should say.
Yeah. And yeah, I wish there were other Beach Boys tracks in here, because like Surf and Safari and All Summer Long just aren't not my favorites. And I love the Beach Boys, but yeah. Now I will tie back into my camp story. I was trying to think why I don't actually like the song Rock Around the Clock.
Okay.
And then I realized that every day at camp, I'm pretty sure it was every day, we would do a parody version of Rock Around the Clock as like to start the day. about the camp, and the lyrics were about the camp. But I didn't realize until just this week that, or and maybe I had realized it when I was younger, but I don't know, it had been so long since I thought about it, that I knew the parody version before I knew the real version. And I just realized this week that this was a parody of Rock Around the Clock. So let me just give you a little taste.
You remember it? Okay.
I absolutely remember. I had to call my sister to get a couple of the I couldn't remember some of the words to it, and then well, I'll tell you why I couldn't remember some of the words after.
Okay.
It goes Dubim Katan Tan Maccabee Chavarim Sofim CIT, and this is the way we say hello. So let's hear that JCC spirit go. Bum ba dum bum bum. Bum ba dum ba ba dum bum bum bum. Fun galore. We're gonna sing and dance and play and swim. Back to nature once again. We're gonna pioneer a new frontier at the JCC. One more time. And then we go around and do it again.
Wow.
The reason that I couldn't remember the words is because there were no words. Like, they just put in the filler, but-a-bum-bum-bum-bum. And when my sister was singing it back to me, and she was doing the bum-bum-bum, I'm like, yeah, but what are the words that are supposed to go there? She's like, no, those are the words.
That's great.
So I guess whoever was in charge of writing the parody just got lazy and was like, I got the beginning and the ends. What should go in the middle? They're just fuck with it.
Throw
just,
in a bunch of bum-bums.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, nobody's going to know.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, man.
Good
stuff. What a good time. What a good time.
Oh, well, we both watched the trailer for this, the sequel.
Oh, my God. This, it looks terrible.
I'm never going to watch it.
We watched the trailer. I don't think there's any point in watching it. There's that goofy VO.
It's what old trailers did. And just to shout out old movie trailers, Hot Dog the Movie, the best bad trailer of all time. See if you can find it on YouTube. Hot Dog the Movie. It's a classic.
Okay, I'm gonna look that up right after. But yeah, like, so we know from the end of the movie of American Graffiti that Terry's missing in action by 65, and John
Milner
is dead by like the next year. Or I think maybe 64. But more American Graffiti starts in 1964 and goes over the following 4 years. So I'm like, first of all, you're getting rid of the plot contrivance that it all takes place on one day because all these guys are separated now. And so it like takes place over like one day over the course of several years. It takes place, I forget if it was New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. So you're getting rid of that. It's not like they're coming back to town. There's no like reunion or anything. But also you're completely forgetting that half these characters can't exist in the world of the franchise. So what are you doing? It just feels like it totally missed the point of the first movie.
Totally missed the point. It was dumb. It was unnecessary. The Ron Howard character is like Mr. MAGA. Like,
yeah, he's getting frisked by the cops. They call him a commie, and he's like, I voted Republican. And it's supposed to be like a joke.
Yeah, and then later on, funny. He's like, I'm the house husband. It should be the housewife. Like.
It feels like an 80s comedy with like, just that they're doing like, they're almost doing Stripes.
Yeah.
You know, like Terry's at like having fun at basic training. And I'm like, dude, this guy is missing in action, according to the ending of the previous film. And he's just like goofing off at training.
And the Debbie character has suddenly become like Anna Faris in Scary Movie. Just like, what's going on?
Oh, man. Yeah, it's a lot of it's like totally over the top and zany for like the beginning minute and the last minute. And then there's like a 10 second chunk in there where there's like a helicopter in Vietnam and they're playing Sounds of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel. And it gets
it's super, all over like, the place.
Oh, my gosh. And there's like protest clips and things like that. Yeah. It's like, but it's just a crazy time. What the fuck?
Totally stupid. Just stupid. But I'm glad we watched it because we had a good laugh over it.
Yeah. What? Do you have any other final thoughts?
No, I think American Graffiti will be a phase two Best Picture nominee easily, no matter what we watch. Not sure any of the acting performances will squeak through depending on what we watch, but it's a really great film.
Yeah, I mean, well, maybe a best supporting nomination for Terry or Debbie.
Maybe. Yeah, we gotta see. We're still early. Basically, I'm just trying to say I think this will be a contender.
Absolutely. And that is a wrap on Phase 2, Minisode 1. Thank you so much for listening.
Phantom Menace.
I'm going to drop just like a little clip of Duel of Fates. I'm just going to drop that in right here.
Oh, you know what? Speaking of who'd be a good teach, Jar Jar Binks.
Misa gonna rob this guy. I had to. Gosh, if you like what we're doing, please give us a rating, people. If you want to hear more Jar Jar Binks impressions, or if you want to hear Alan do a Wolfman Jack impression.
Hey, everybody, you're listening to the radio, and one thing I want to point out is in the movie American Graffiti, Richard Dreyfuss's character asks Wolfman to put a request through the airwaves, and Wolfman says to the girl, if you don't show up, I'm gonna come get you. And I thought that was really weird.
Yeah, it was weird. Yeah, it was really weird. One of my favorite bits, actually, is the Wolfman talking to, like, the operator.
Yeah.
That was such a weird bit, but I loved it. God, that was a really good impression. My Jar Jar Binks will not be making a return.
And at the end of the more American Graffiti trailer, Wolfman Jack's like, I'll be there, too!
That's right. Oh, man, I hope you got a healthy payday for that. Anyway, leave a positive review. Find us on Twitter if you want to find either of your patriotic co-hosts. I'm Ben Rosen at Not That Ben Rosen.
I'm Alan Austin at Alan_Austin_.
And we'll see you next time.
Yeah!